welcome to Recovery Internet Radio broadcast live and direct from Straight Stuff Studios. Hope you're having a beautiful Father's Day weekend, and happy Father's Day to all of our fathers out there, and happy Father's Day to mine, who happens to be sitting in a chair about 10 feet from me. We lost track of the number of episodes, but we're well into our second year, and thank you very much for joining us here tonight and every Sunday at 7 p.m. We're happy to have you. We've got a great show for you tonight. I've got a couple of quick announcements, if you'd bear with me. Nothing serious. I'd just like to send a quick shout-out to our mentoring program that we are heavily involved in called Sidekicks Mentoring. We will actually be in the Cardboard Cup Regatta here in beautiful Crystal Lake, Illinois, the 28th Saturday of two weekends from now. Yeah, absolutely.
Look for the pirate ship.
Look for the Yar Avast, and it'll say Sidekicks on the side. So we'd love to see you out there. We're hopefully going to sink some mentees. So
yeah,
it should be a
and
fun
I've got,
time.
I've got my money on 15 seconds of float.
we're shooting for best sinking, which is a prize they award. So we'll hope for the best. Also, I'd like to say, if you haven't gone and done it already, I've been pitching it for a long time now, go and check out Double Take. They're a great local Chicago band. They do a lot of cover music, according to their website, from the 50s, 60s to today. And check out their website. It's doubletakechicago.com, and it'll start playing Brick House. You know, make sure your speakers are turned up real loud. It'll surprise the heck out of you. It's really fun. But they've got a gig coming up on the 21st. At Luigi's House in Julian Bar. That's in Aurora. So check out their website for all their upcoming events. And with that, I'd like to pass the mic over to Mr. Rick Atwater, our host.
Yay!
Yay!
Should I play the applause music? Here you go.
Yeah, play the... Okay, that's good. So welcome tonight. I was just thinking, it's Father's Day.
I thought Father's Day was yesterday. You were the one that straightened me out. It's today.
I will straighten you out all the time.
Yeah. So I don't know what I was thinking. But so I kind of personally, I sort of celebrated Father's Week. And that's the way I worked it.
There's nothing wrong with over-celebrating.
No, I don't.
I always said that.
No.
Yeah, I can vouch for that. It is true.
Yeah.
About maybe 14 days. I mean, it's been a while.
New lawnmower, a new drill.
It's been a solid week for you, man.
It has. It's been big. So welcome, everybody, to Recovery Internet Radio and our show, Straight Stuff on Addictions. Tonight, our tag, and I think you'll like this one, brought to us by Kathy herself, the Queen of Denial, spelled D-E-N-I-L-E. I don't know. That was my spelling. We could have gone with the regular spelling, I guess.
It really doesn't matter. It was spelled both ways.
I think we'll get the point across.
Yes, it is the point.
So anyway, thanks for joining us tonight. Where we are every Sunday night at 7.
Indeed.
And thanks to our engineer Chris and our guest Kathy B.
Woo-hoo!
You can call in to the show for questions, comments, or opinions at 323-792-2977, our regular call-in number. You can tweet us live at Rick Atwater.
Please do.
Please do. We'd love to have questions or comments. And remember to check out recoveryinternetradio.com. That's
recoveryinternetradio.com
for all our archive shows and recovery resources. So let's light this candle, shall we?
Why not?
All right. Anyway, thanks for coming out tonight. It's nice to have you. I know you enough to know a little bit about your story, so I was interested. And the first thing I wanted to ask you is, were you, to your knowledge, ever a normal drinker?
No, I was not. I didn't really start drinking until I was in college. I smoked pot in high school. I was a flower child.
Oh, okay.
And I can count on like one hand the number of times I drank alcohol when I was in high school. And each time it was to get drunk.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in college was when I really discovered mostly beer. I drank wine and beer. Was not a hard alcohol drinker. And I would say I got to daily drinking by the time I was a junior in college.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't get drunk every night, but that's not normal to drink every single night. So no.
Yeah,
I moved
not.
Right into not being a normal drinker.
But I'm sure you didn't. That's only in hindsight. I mean.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course, I had no idea that that it was a problem at that time.
Do you, what is a normal drinker? I mean, this is off the reservation already, but what is
what
a normal
drinker?
What
could that possibly? Well, do we know? I don't. You know, it is not me.
There's plenty of lists for things that might make you not a normal drinker, but there's not very many lists that you could fill out that say, "Oh, yeah, I'm good."
Well, it's that that whole thing of can you take it or leave it, I couldn't leave it.
Yeah.
So yeah. I from the get-go, once I started drinking, probably, sophomore, junior year, there was no telling where it would go, and I wanted to drink every day. There was,
yeah.
That was just my beverage. That was my evening beverage.
Some people like Diet Dr. Pepper.
Your evening beverage, right. Yeah, Diet Dr. Pepper, iced tea.
Beer.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
All right, so, yeah, the normal thing, like I'll ask people that from time to time, what's normal, and the take it or leave it thing comes up, and it's like, I could take it or leave it. I just don't want to leave it, so it's my choice.
Right?
So I have a choice, so therefore I don't have a problem.
I'm sure that's what I thought back then.
Okay, because it gets really difficult to put your finger on that whole normal thing,
But I know somebody who's normal when I see them. I just know it's not me.
Yeah, like if you saw them and you'd know that wasn't like you.
The person you go out to dinner with and leaves their half a glass of wine there.
Yeah. Yeah, I always tell people, how many times this week have you thought about playing Monopoly? And they always go, I didn't even think about playing Monopoly.
Exactly.
That's how normal drinkers think about alcohol.
Yeah.
They just don't think.
They don't.
You do not have a Monopoly problem.
So we don't have, at least you don't have a Monopoly problem.
No, I don't.
Thank God for that. Okay. So do you have any addiction stuff in your family, in your family of origin? Or is this something we can talk about a little bit?
Oh, yeah, sure. My fraternal grandfather was a great drunk. He was a dentist, and the story goes that when he had a patient, my grandmother would go next door to the bar and get him so that he could work on his patient.
Mm.
And he was highly successful.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, my father never drank. And to this day, he'll have probably 6 beers a year.
Yeah.
That's
because he saw.
That's because he's
He saw what it did.
Experienced
it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's my dad's side of the family. On my mother's side of the family, I had teetotaler grandparents, but I believe my great grandfather may have had an alcohol problem. It's unclear.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother is a good wino, and I have about a 50% alcoholism rate in my family. Come from a family of 9 kids.
Okay.
So 4.5 of us are drunk.
4.5 of you are drunks.
4.5.
4.5. There's the numbers again. They say, they say it skips a generation. I don't know if that's statistically
I wonder if it skips a generation or if there's just enough effect on a generation that generation avoids it at all costs.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
It's a genetic thing, but that it's like a experience thing, that if you live through it and you see the negative side of it.
It's so abhorrent.
Right. Well, I have a couple of sisters who say, I don't want to get like mom.
Yeah.
And so, and I have one that has said to me, I know by the way alcohol takes the edge off, I could get that way. And yet.
So she just abstains.
She does. I mean, not 100%, but she does.
Yeah, she's just careful.
Yeah, very well. And she's the one that we went on a vacation, and she got pretty ripped and said, "I've got to stop drinking now because I'm too tipsy." I'm like, oh, yeah, right.
Honey, you don't know about Tipsy.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to see Tipsy, I'll show you.
Thankfully,
Tipsy.
I was already sober at the time, and I was the DD. So.
Yeah. Oh, well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and who says Tipsy anyway?
Yeah, you know? Really. I know.
Drunks don't say Tipsy, as far as I know.
I know. Mm-mm.
I mean, I've never used that term in public. I would never say that.
Yeah.
You ever say that? Tipsy?
Tipsy. Really.
Were you ever
no.
tipsy? No, I don't think you were.
Tipsy.
Yeah, we don't get tipsy, and we don't go cocktailing very often. Not the point.
I always thought that was a funny word. Cocktail.
I did too. I never knew. I never knew that you could turn cocktail into a verb. I never knew that until really.
I never knew that until recently,
almost like the last couple of years. I heard
quite
people
urban
say that.
Anyway.
It's urban.
It's very urban, I'm sure.
So, when did you figure you crossed the line? As far as it was like when you were daily drinking, or
well, no, oh no, way further than that. Daily drinking was minimal.
Yeah, that was.
It was when I got set one day and had a morning drink. And that was pretty cool. You know, I thought, and I knew
that was,
you've done it now.
Okay.
Yeah, that was it.
That was it.
Because a daily drinker is one thing, but an all day daily drinker is another.
Okay.
It's quite another.
Yeah. That is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a, you know, I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, when you ask alcoholics questions, not recovering alcoholics, but non-recovering alcoholics, you have to be very careful how you ask the question. Like, you know, like you just made the distinction between daily, all-day drinking
and daily drinking.
So, yeah.
And that was, but that was the line for me. Even though I know today, I crossed that line way before then.
Okay.
But when I knew I crossed the line,
it was that.
Was when
how
I
much
was an
after,
all-day daily drinker.
How much after your junior year in college was that when?
Oh, goodness. That was probably 15, 20 years almost.
Okay. So.
Yeah, quite a while.
Okay.
Well, wait a minute. Get your
numbers. Get your points.
Probably about 18. Yeah, 15 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd been working on it for quite some time.
Right. Right.
And it's interesting that you said, I got upset, and that was so
that was an excuse to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it was, I mean, I suppose it was an excuse, or it was just what your brain needed to make that happen.
Right.
When you're, I mean, you know, is there a difference between an excuse and denial?
No. But my denial was a different matter altogether.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, then, can we talk about that?
Sure.
So how did you manage then to go from daily drinking to the daily all-day drinking, or starting with the morning drink stuff, and know now that you had a problem way back then? What did you have to tell yourself in order to keep going? What kinds of stuff did you even think about it?
Are you talking about before or after I got into recovery?
Well, before.
Before I got it. Yeah, because there's that.
There's a difference.
Big difference. Big difference. I really thought that just sipping all day, you know, would keep me pretty even keeled.
Mm-hmm.
And so my whole thing was, even though I was drinking all day, I wasn't drinking a whole lot all day.
Right.
You
were just sipping.
I just let it go at night sometimes, not every single night. So, mm-hmm. So that's kind of, that was my denial, was I was keeping it together, you know.
Okay.
I own my own business, which of course is dangerous for a drunk.
Yeah.
And I was keeping it all together.
Were you high strung that you needed to keep it together? How do you like that term, high strung? Have you ever? When's the last time you heard that one? High strung.
High strung. You know, it's funny because one of your questions that you had given me in advance said, you know, changed.
Yeah.
And I started writing down, oh, yeah, I'm much calmer now. But don't ask the people I work with today. Because they didn't know me then.
They still think you're high strung.
Exactly. They do.
Yeah.
I know they do. But I'm, like, so much different. But, yes, I was high strung. But, so alcohol kind of mellowed me a bit.
So let's describe for those of those in the our listening audience who might not be might not understand exactly what high strung means. What was high strung for you? Likely to get angry, highly emotional, easily hurt.
Actually, it's easily agitated. I think it's mostly easily agitated. And
people pissed you off?
No, people didn't piss me off so much as situations would piss me off.
Okay.
And they still do today. But now I recognize that they do.
Okay.
I know that's weird, but sometimes I say these things happen to me only because they irritate me more than other people. and that was true back then, but I would think that it was the end of the world, you know, if something was going wrong. It was just too much.
And it could be a fairly small thing.
Uh-huh. Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I told you I was a landscaper and just, in fact, the thing that got me that first drink in the morning that got me irritated was I got a call that my crew had broken a water main at somebody's house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the water had been turned off, the plumber had been called, but that was it. I was off and running. It was just then.
Freaking out.
It was, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we broke three or four more water mains after when I had that business.
Mm-hmm.
None of them freaked me out like the first one did, but.
But that kind of stuff, I mean, some people would,
some people would handle it.
They would handle it. They would go right to, what's the solution? Where are we at?
Yes, exactly. What do I need to do to fix this?
And you,
instead,
on the other
I
hand,
would, me.
You were freaking out
yeah,
and then taking
yeah,
a drink.
Yeah, exactly.
I gotcha. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. So we talked about this thing that you heard. Now maybe I'm jumping ahead. So tell me the theory about the first one gets you
yeah,
drunk.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Let's back up. We'll get to that one.
Yeah. Get me into recovery.
All right. Let's get to recovery. So take me from where you are to what happens next in the life of Kathy B.
Well, about 5 years after that happened, I was at home and I had a number of tasks to do. I was doing some mending. I had a landscape design to take care of all things. I had dishes to do, and one or two other chores. And the only thing I could think about was the fact that I did not have enough wine in the house for the day.
Hmm.
I could think of nothing else. And I kept trying to go from task to task to task. And finally, I had a moment of clarity that said, you're out of your mind because you cannot concentrate on any one little thing because you just don't have enough wine in the house. So I made a phone call.
Mm.
And I called a therapist who was a friend of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And made an appointment to go see her that day and finished off the wine I had in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't go get any more.
Yeah. And patted yourself back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For
well,
having control.
You know, yeah, I wasn't going to waste it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I did go see her that afternoon, and she told me that she would like me to go see a treatment counselor, totally threw me for a loop.
Were you lit when you went to see her?
No. Mm-mm.
You waited
no.
You waited till after?
Yeah. I mean, it had been from the time I finished off the wine until I saw her, it was like 6 or 8 hours. So.
Okay, so yeah. You weren't.
Yeah, no, I'm fine.
You got lit.
I was freaked out, but I was fine.
You got lit and then unlit before
yeah,
you saw her.
Exactly. Sobered
okay.
up.
Sobered up before you saw the counselor. Always a good idea.
Yeah, I thought so.
Always a good idea.
I didn't pat myself on the back for that, though.
Okay. So you made the phone call and because you knew that you thought you were crazy or?
No, I knew alcohol was a problem.
Oh, okay.
At that point.
That you knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be called the obsession.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the obsession
compulsion.
Of alcohol, the
mm-hmm,
compulsion
sure.
to drink. That the definition of alcoholism, I guess.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
The obsession. Yeah. Thinking about it and then doing it.
And then doing it. The
yeah.
compulsion, yeah.
Okay. So then you went to see a treatment counselor.
So then I went into treatment. She wanted me to be a treatment counselor. And which surprised me. I thought, you know, that she would fix me. And then I went to see the treatment counselor, and then they told me I'd be going to AA, which surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
But I was freaked out. I was scared. I was freaked out. So I was following what anybody told me to do, I was doing.
Were you married at the time?
Oh, yeah. I'd been married for 13 years by then.
Okay.
Yeah. And
had your husband expressed any concern about it?
Oh, every once in a while, he'd sometimes he'd be concerned, sometimes, you know, a little bit, maybe not. I mean, RZA wasn't too bad, you know.
Yeah.
But, his biggest concern was after I spoke with October.
Oh, okay. And that part we'll get to.
Yeah.
Okay. So the treatment counselor suggested you go into treatment?
Yeah, it was an outpatient treatment program, nine-month program, you know, and it was like 5 days a week for the first 6 weeks.
Yeah.
3 days a week for the next 6 weeks, and then 1 day a week for the next, for, I don't know, up to nine. It was 9 months. It was a nine-month program. And then they told me I'd be going AA, did that the next day. So within the matter of 4 days, I was already in an AA meeting. And I stayed sober for 45 days.
Okay. Let me back up a minute when you said you went to that initial counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And you thought she would fix you. Did you think there was, like, psychologically you were...
I didn't really.
...screwed up so that then you needed to drink or, you know, some people...
You know, I didn't really feel that way. I never thought that it was my brain making me do it. I mean, I just figured I was dependent on alcohol.
Okay.
You
pretty much had the drill by the time... But you were surprised that she sent you on
to a treatment center.
To a treatment center.
I didn't know enough.
You knew a little, but you didn't know enough.
Yeah. I had not researched alcoholism, let me put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And it's probably like most people, you don't...
Yeah, you don't think... I didn't think about it. I didn't even know anything about treatment centers.
Yeah, you know, no, if you think ahead, you probably wouldn't do it.
Probably not.
You know, I mean,
probably
God knows
not.
With AA, they don't, you know...
Well, and if she had told me, I'm not going to help you, I need you to go to AA, there's a good chance I might not have done that.
Right. So that the process
that took, it was good.
Was good that mm-hmm. gave you a chance to accept the pieces as you went along. And then, so within 4 days, you're in an AA meeting.
Mm-hmm.
When do you remember your first meeting?
Absolutely do.
I even
remember who took chips.
Really?
Absolutely do.
I mean, do you still know those people?
Yes, I do.
Do you have an exceptionally good memory? Or
no,
is it
that
just
was, that
it
became
was so,
my home group.
Oh, okay. So you knew those folks.
Yeah. It was a Saturday meeting, and this was a Saturday offshoot of my home group. And it happened to be their celebration meeting, which, now this is California.
Right.
You know, they don't have anniversaries there. They have birthdays, and everybody sings, and you have cake.
Right.
And chips are a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, and all that's a real big deal, which is part of the story.
Yeah.
So I remember the people who took chips, especially the 30 and 60 and 90 days.
Yeah.
Because that was impressive, you know.
Sure.
And to me, I was close to them.
Right.
In sobriety. And then they said, you know, we have a meeting here. This was on Saturday. They said, we have a meeting here every single weekday at 7 in the morning. And I'm like, I can do that. I'm self-employed. I can do that. So.
And that's what you did. Did
mm-hmm.
you do the 90 meetings in 90 days thing, or did you?
I don't think I did at that time because I was in the treatment thing. But I went to that group almost every single day.
Yeah.
I mean, but it wasn't a structured 90 and 90. I mean, I'm pretty sure I probably did about 120 and 90, so it didn't really kind of matter.
Right. Right.
So.
But that wasn't something that you were, because I know, you know, maybe they don't do that in California.
They do that in California.
Oh, they do. 90
they do,
and 90
but
a,
yeah, but the treatment center didn't.
Okay.
So when you're in the treatment center, there wasn't a big push at the beginning for us to get sponsors. You know, it's like they've got you kind of a thing.
Right.
You know, they're structuring their program for you.
Right.
And so they don't ask you to go get also another structure through a sponsor.
Right.
Which I don't know that that's all that great, but that's why the 90 and 90 wasn't happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But ostensibly it did happen anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Uh-huh. Plenty of people use that term.
Yeah. So anyway, so you were sober for 45 days.
I was sober for 45 days. And then I was at, I had heard the first drink will get you drunk.
Okay. This is the theory.
This is the theory.
It's the first one, not
yeah,
the last
first
one.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And of course I told you, I remember all the people that I saw at my very first AA meeting. still friends with them. Well, I was listening carefully. I'm a good study. It does not do me well in many cases, but I am a good study.
So you were paying close attention.
Close attention.
It sounds like you might have been paying close attention to the loophole.
Exactly.
But close attention nevertheless.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Word for word.
Right, word for word. You guys said.
The first drink will get you drunk. And so I was at home, and I still had the little tiny bottles of wine in the house because I used them for cooking. I had gotten rid of my drinking wine. And I have no idea what thought preceded the fact that I thought I'd try that out to see if that really, really would happen. Mm-hmm. And I did, and I didn't get drunk. And
That day,
and I didn't have anything to drink the next day or next day, but then the next day after that I did. So,
did you eventually get drunk?
Oh yeah. Not very often. But yeah, I did eventually get drunk. I mean, I was always trying to get drunk. But when you're hiding, that was the biggest problem, is everybody still thought I was sober.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't telling anybody that I had taken a drink.
And that makes it hard to drink.
It's very difficult to drink. Not only that, you know you're lying, so that makes it really hard on yourself.
Uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortable.
Awkward.
Oh yeah, I'm taking chips.
Yeah.
I took a 60-day chip.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sober, you know. And so I was out of my mind, and I was hiding it. And it took I'm trying to think about the timeline here. So it took about 5 months. My husband started suspecting, because, of course, as you get away with it, you get more reckless.
Mm-hmm.
And he started suspecting that perhaps I wasn't sober. And he actually caught me sneaking a drink.
Were you still drinking those little bottles?
Or oh, heck no.
You went out and got
them. Well, actually, I was sometimes.
Because they're easier to sneak. I mean,
oh, they are. They're easy, you know, and they're easy to hide in the car. I mean, you know, they're just easy. So.
Yeah, you put them in your pocket, but you don't put more than one in each pocket because they clink.
Actually, I didn't do the pocket thing. No, okay. Yes, they would clink.
They would clink,
yeah,
and then people
the pocket
would
thing. But I knew every hiding place. I had a truck, and I knew every hiding place in my truck.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would squirrel away wine. It was wine at that time. And I'd buy it. I'd bring it home. I'd pour it into liter bottles,
mm-hmm.
and then get rid of the whatever it was I had bought, gallon or whatever.
Right.
But I'd take it to the recycle center. I was a responsible drunk.
You would recycle.
I would recycle.
Good for you. Thank God. I mean, it's just. It makes me.
It's good that there's a silver lining.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
You know, that was one of the things. Even before I came into the program, it was hilarious. I used to hide my empties.
Yeah.
You know, some people, they hide their bottles. Yeah. I would hide my empties because my husband knew I was drinking at that time, right?
Yeah.
So I'd always have something in the refrigerator. But then, you know, when it would get to the empty part, I'd hide it and, you know, stick another one in there.
You didn't want him to know how much. Yeah.
No, so I would
hide my
empties.
You know that you were drinking, but not how much
right.
you were drinking.
I would hide my empties till
recycle
day.
You know, that whole thing about the recycling and the wine is so California. I mean, it really is.
It kind of is, isn't it?
It kind of is. I mean, but so anyway, so that's, you know, back to the first one. So how do you see that theory now?
The first one absolutely gives you the compulsion and the obsession right back.
Okay.
And if you can't get rid of the obsession and the compulsion, you are doomed.
And that must have been what they meant.
Of course. But
it's not like
they don't tell
literally.
You that.
It's not literal. They didn't say it wasn't literal.
They didn't tell me that.
If you thought that the little bottle didn't get me drunk.
Right.
It took, you know, four or five months.
Oh,
and then,
goodness.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I think we're about halfway there, so I think we're going to stop here, and we're going to...
Oh, good. Maybe I'll get sober after the break.
Get sober after the break. We'll go to sobriety, and we'll go to recovery, and we will... What are we going to hear?
We're going to listen to a little track called Willin by Linda Ronstadt.
Okay.
So thanks for being with us here tonight. Hope you enjoy the music. We'll be back with you in just a minute.
All right.
Thank you. been walked by the rain, driven by the snow, I'm drunk and dirty. Don't you know that I'm still willing? Out on the road, late last night, I see my pretty Alice in every headline.
Thanks for being here with us tonight on Recovery Internet Radio. Check us out at recoveryinternetradio.com for all our past archive shows, and you can just check and see what we got, what we're up to the next week there as well, as well as lots of other fun stuff. So we're having a great conversation with Kathy B here tonight. Thanks for being with us here tonight, and let's get right back to it. I think we're at a good point. Where were we?
Well, where we were is we were just. I think we got sober and we stayed sober 45 days.
Right,
and
we did.
Talked about the theory of the first one and went through that a little bit. And then, so what I guess the piece I wanted to talk about before we get to go a little further with the recovery thing is, so we just started talking about how hard that was to lie, how hard that was to be, you know, the deception and then the guilt and the shame associated with that. So let's talk about that a little bit. I mean,
sure. You know, I was one of the problems with my home group was a morning group. That was actually a problem because, you know, I would go to the meeting sober.
Yeah.
And then I had all day to do whatever it was I was going to do.
Right.
And that was a problem. I kept it a secret. I told you that my husband caught me drinking at one point, and I realized how sick I was when I was still in that 9-month program at that time. I was 7 months in, I think. And I said to him, he was in the family portion with me, and I said to him, if you tell the counselors about this, I'll stop going to treatment. And I thought about what I had said to him for about 24 hours. And then I said that was absolutely wrong, and I went in and told them myself, and I told them what I had told him. And after that, you know, I was freaked out a little bit, stayed sober for maybe, I don't know, a week or two,
mm-hmm.
and then started the whole thing again. And after that, I don't think I went more than a week without drinking at any one time, and that went on for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So 2 years total from my first day in to when I actually got sober.
That second time when you went and you told on yourself,
mm-hmm.
and you recognized how sick you were, I think most people would say, "Oh my God, isn't that enough?"
Wouldn't that do it?
Wouldn't that do it?
You know, here's the thing. That's where that compulsion.
Yeah.
There was a lot of things going on there, and I can look back now and I can say that this might be part of it. And not to disparage the program in California, but length of time in sobriety is extremely valued there. And it's a great cause for celebration, it is.
Right.
But then after a relapse, one feels so like a failure.
Mm-hmm.
Like a total failure.
Yeah, like there's all this energy devoted to celebrating these anniversaries.
Right.
So if you
right.
don't make it,
yeah,
you have
if you
to,
don't make
you have to,
it,
you have to be the one that comes
why
in.
Why couldn't
says,
you?
Ugh.
And you know,
got to send the cake.
So
back.
A lot of that, part of that was why I continued to lie. Another reason I continued to lie was because I refused to leave. And I thought, if I go in there and tell them every single day I drank yesterday, every single day I drank yesterday, eventually I'm going to get looks that are going to put me right out the door. And I thought, if I can't do that. I've got to stick around. I've got to see if I can get this thing. So wanting it made me lie, which I know sounds really sick,
mm-hmm.
but it did. It was the only way for me.
In my brain,
to stick around.
They would kick you out if they knew.
Well, I knew they wouldn't kick me out. I mean, I knew plenty, but
yeah.
I knew they wouldn't kick me out. I just, you know, I didn't want to disappoint.
Right.
And after a while, they figured it out too, because they would ask me, "How many days you have now?" And I would say, "I'll let you know when I have 30 days."
Wow.
So once that happened, that was about 6 months before I got sober. Once that happened, they stopped asking.
Right.
So, and then once I came in and I had admitted, you know, that I'd been drinking and stuff. I had stopped in chips finally. And because I used to take 30-day chips when I didn't have a day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'd take 60-day chips and, you know, then I'd come in and say, well, I've been drinking all this time. One time a woman came to me and she said, "I am so worried about you because the times that you're drinking is getting closer and closer together."
Mm-hmm.
And
did you notice that?
Well, no, they weren't.
Oh.
And I truthfully said to her, "Patty, the times that I'm being honest are getting closer and closer together. My drinking hasn't changed at all.
In the last 18 months."
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was the absolute truth, you know, and that was kind of a moment of clarity for me.
Right.
That it's like, I can't stand this anymore. This is just getting old, you know.
Right.
So
it's almost like you had an honesty problem.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, the drinking. Yeah, the drinking was incidental. It was the honesty.
The honesty,
no,
problem.
I
man.
Mean, yeah. So. Well, but I wonder if you know, a lot would, if you put yourself in somebody else's shoes, and it may be difficult. But I've heard a lot of times, "Oh, you know, they shamed me, or I just don't want to deal with that because I, you know, whatever, those people, blah, blah, blah," you know. But you didn't do that.
I never felt that way.
Yeah.
I never felt that way. I always, you know, even when I could tell I had disappointed people, they never shamed me. I never felt unwelcome. You know, I never felt that I couldn't go back.
And see, that's a great message, because I think people don't understand that there's a difference between when you feel ashamed,
exactly,
and when other people, because
exactly,
when you feel ashamed, that's yours.
Yeah, sure. It's on you. Yeah, yeah.
For somebody else, they you know, they don't know what's going on in there. They're being supportive.
Right.
They're being,
they were,
you know,
they were totally supportive.
Yeah.
You know, I remember specifically things, you know, where I would have admitted I admitted at a meeting, and some guy I didn't even know said, you know what, it takes what it takes. And that meant so much to me to hear that from him.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know the guy.
And that's why I asked that question about, you know, having gone through that business of having to fess up finally when your husband caught you, and people would think, isn't that enough? And the truth is what that man said.
Uh-huh.
It takes what it takes.
And, you know, and it took a lot for me,
Were you scared during that period of time, or?
Yeah, I was scared. In fact, I was trying. I was reaching and trying all sorts of things. Somebody sent me to a therapist that they had known, and this therapist was a recovering alcoholic, you know, and I said to her, I said, and I drove, I think it was 70 miles to go see her. Yeah, and I'd buy wine on the way home. But
and for those of you who don't know about the L.A. area, driving 70 miles is no small.
It's no small.
That's pack of lunchtime.
Yeah. So, but I would go see her, and I'd look around in the store, by the way, on the way home to see if I knew anybody. This is 70 miles from my home, so I'm sick.
Check around and see if you knew anybody before you bought the wine.
Yeah.
Would that have stopped you?
No. Maybe. Probably. I don't know.
Have we switched to box yet, or are we still?
Oh, I was on and off box all the time.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was no big deal. I'll have to tell you a little honey story after I tell you this.
Okay.
But anyway, I said to her, what did it take for you? And she just looked at me point blank and said, I see you. You know, she landed in the emergency room. They thought she was on death's door, and, you know, and she got sober.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was, unless I got in an auto accident, I was not going to get there because I was hiding it, so I wasn't drinking enough to get to ICU.
Right.
So, you know.
So that wasn't going to be your road.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm.
So you were going to tell a hiding story?
Oh, this is hilarious. Okay, it's the year 1995. And it is the San Diego World Convention, of which I have a commitment to do registration.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't live in San Diego. My brother does. And he was going to be gone for the weekend. And he said, but you can use my house. And I said, okay, fine. So I went down there and I bought a box of wine on my way.
Mm-hmm.
And I hid it in his house. Now, he's not home. Nobody around that house knows me. But I hid the...
I
mean, and I knew when I was doing it how sick that was, but I still did it.
It's like one of those things where you lie even when lying is not
when
necessary.
When it's not necessary, yeah. Absolutely. So yeah. That's pretty sick.
So hiding wasn't necessary, but you hid
it
anyway.
But I still did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. You know, God forbid anybody found me out. You know.
What do you think that was?
Well, that had... I'm sure that had a lot to do with me wanting to look good.
Okay.
You know, there's a family dynamic where I was the smart one.
Mm.
I was always the one who, I did things, but I never got caught.
Mm.
My sister who always got caught. So it was like, why can't you be more like your sister? You know, this kind of thing. And what was interesting was I was ashamed that I needed help and needed that I was a drunk,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was kind of funny that the tables got turned and my sisters, one of my sisters, I have many, said to me, but you're the one who got sober.
Mm.
See, so again, one more time, I'm the good one.
I see.
And, you know, I couldn't let them down.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to live up to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when alcoholism starts taking you out, there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it doesn't mean that you're not a good one. It just means you're alcoholic.
Yeah.
But
still, I'm a drunk.
Yeah. So,
it was interesting when I took my first year cake. That's what we call it in California.
Yeah.
When I took my first year cake, 3 years after I had started the program, everybody could figure it out.
Right.
So,
anybody that had any kind of math skills at all.
It was like my mom's like, what? And I said, had a few problems, Mom.
A couple of bumps in the road.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was enough for
and
her?
And it was just like, okay, fine. Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your whole family knew about...
They knew I was in the program, yeah.
They didn't know what the details were.
Yeah, they didn't know the details of my relapsing at all.
Yeah.
Because nobody else was in the program.
Yeah.
there's just my husband and program people who knew that.
Yeah, I really think that that's pretty, you know, the fact, you know, the way you explained it helps me to understand. I mean, on the one hand, I would say it's pretty remarkable that you hung in there. But the reason you hung in there was because that was, you know, the program was what supported you. You needed to do that.
Yes.
You needed
yeah.
to be the good person.
Well, yeah, that was part of it. I needed to be the good person, but I also wanted to stop drinking.
Yeah.
Somewhere. You know, I would hang on to that thing about having a desire to drink, and I would actually say to my sponsor, I want to have a desire to have a desire.
Yeah.
You know, and I've heard that since then from other people. So I totally understand it when they say that.
Yeah.
It's like I have a desire to not have the obsession.
Yeah. However.
However, I have the obsession.
I still have the obsession.
And, you know, and I'm a very self-indulgent person. So there you go.
There you go. So you got – so finally.
Finally, I had gone on a retreat with my sponsor, and – my parents were out of town, and I went to their house after the retreat and proceeded to get pretty loaded and then drove myself home, as good drunks do. And the next day, my husband said to me, is this how you celebrate going on a retreat with your sponsor? And the disgust in his voice was almost too much for me to bear. I was really kind of devastated. And I don't know if I did it that day. I don't know if I did it the next day. I just know that during that week, I made an appointment with a doctor who I had seen right before I'd gone into the treatment program. And I went in and I asked him for Anabuse.
Hmm.
And Anabuse had been suggested to me once by someone. And I rejected the notion, but I didn't know too much about it. When I asked the doctor for Anabuse, the first thing he said to me was, he didn't even ask me about my drinking. He just said, you could die. And I said, but I've got to stop. I just have to stop. And so, you know, he gave me good direction. And I followed that direction. He told me that to take my Anabuse in the morning when I was strong. He used those exact words. And that worked for me because I almost all addicts are strong in the morning. Everybody wakes up with that resolve.
Today,
I'm not going to smoke today. I'm not going to drink today. I'm, you know.
Tell me about the. I remember you telling me a little story about your sobriety date, the Anabuse, and the little
so
game
sick.
You played
yes.
with your.
I called the doctor. I made the appointment. I went and saw the doctor on November 28th, and he said, "Could you not drink today? The rest of today." And then start taking it tomorrow because you cannot take it with any alcohol in your system. And I said, okay. And then I went home and I realized the date and my original sobriety date had been December 1st. So I drank that day and I drank the next day I don't drink the next day and I didn't drink on December 1st. So I had the same sobriety date. And,
you thought ahead so you could have the same.
Every time I tell that story, I thank God that I still started taking the Anabuse when I did. Because I know for a fact there's every chance that that resolve would have gone and I would have thrown those pills away.
Yeah.
So I'm lucky.
Yeah, or that was a miracle.
Exactly. Well, I think that, you know, a lot of times people get sober because they feel that there's divine inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel that... I wasn't there. My divine inspiration was actually in asking for the Anabuse.
Yeah.
I believe that today. And I know a lot of recovery professionals don't like Anabuse. It is a dangerous thing. But I think in some instances it's helpful. Some people in recovery didn't like me sharing that I was on Anabuse, that I had been on Anabuse or that I took Anabuse, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then some people that I thought were absolute gods in the program would share with me that they got sober taking Anabuse.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just one of those things. It's for some people. It's not for everybody.
Yeah.
I also know people who did drink on Anabuse and landed in the hospital. So
yeah. Well, yeah. And whether, you know, to me, like the way you explain it, the miracle was the asking.
Right.
the right. Inn abuse did its job.
It did its job. It was a totally psychological job, obviously.
But had you not asked for it in the first place,
right.
It wouldn't have been, you know.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So you found the willingness or
what? To put, what it was I was willing to put something in between me and a drink.
Right.
And that's what I did.
Right.
Is I put something in between me and a drink. Unfortunately, it had to be Inn abuse, but at least it was something. You know, whatever it takes.
And whatever it takes. You know, whatever it takes.
And that's how I felt. Finally, I got to there.
Yeah.
What's it going to take? And I knew that my keen, analytical, alcoholic mind will get me to a drink every single time. But if I took the Inn abuse, it wouldn't.
Right.
So I knew that. I knew that much about myself. So I did it.
Yeah. And the subtitle to your story could be, she knew a lot. Just not quite enough.
Yeah, or just enough to be dangerous.
Just enough to be dangerous. So you took, how long did you take the interviews?
I took it every single day for, I think, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I took it every other day for another 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And
in fact,
like?
I just got rid of pills. Inn abuse, you take them to the
yeah.
the drop-off.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what to do with them. I just got rid of some just like 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was it like for you when you finally decided not to take Inn abuse anymore?
By that time, it was kind of a no-brainer. It was just like, you know, you're just doing this just to do it. I mean, I was ensconced in the program. I had worked all my steps. I was sponsoring people. Drink was not an issue.
Yeah.
And really, drink became not an issue fairly fast for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it had the first time, too.
Yeah.
Which is why I kept taking it, because I knew that I was very comfortable those first 45 days.
Yeah.
I was quite comfortable. So the fact that I was comfortable,
not good enough.
Not good enough for me.
No.
Yeah. I had to have that one thing between me and any chance of a drink.
And that's really, I mean, I think that's really a good message for people, because I hear people say all the time, oh, yeah, I can quit drinking. I quit drinking, and everything is fine. I feel fine. And as soon as I hear that, I think,
you'll start again.
Yeah, because
maybe don't get too comfortable.
Yeah,
it's,
you can't get too comfortable.
It's much more subtle than that. It's not about. It's about what goes on between the ears, not
Absolutely
what goes on
is.
in the hand around the can or the hand
Which
around the bottle.
Which is why I'm still in the program. It's what goes on between the ears.
Right.
I know if I don't keep coming and keep hearing and keep listening to myself and what goes on between my ears and
mm-hmm.
check on that,
mm-hmm.
I'll start thinking it's okay and it's not
Do
okay.
Do you ever hear circus music? The calliope.
No, is that a problem
especially.
For you?
Occasionally. Yeah.
We can talk about that.
You want to talk there?
Yeah, let's talk about the circus music.
I think sometimes I hear yours, which is
really strange.
It
turned
up
real loud
you.
In there. Yeah.
It's dangerous. So you have to keep going here. I mean,
I do keep going, yeah.
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 You can't...
No resting on my laurels.
No resting on the laurels.
And, you know, I'm always learning.
Have you kept
learning.
Changing, do you think?
Yes, I have. Some people might not think so, but I find that I'm able to, whenever I get uncomfortable, the program's taught me how to, like, look at that.
Yeah.
And to me, that's so huge, because it used to be that if I got uncomfortable, it was about everybody else or everything else. Or, you know, and it's
not
like,
about you.
Not about me. No, I could never be at fault or be a problem or maybe look at things the wrong way. And now I know that probably 95% of the time it has something to do with how I'm looking at something or something I've caused. Or maybe my ego.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many different facets to the things that make us comfortable or uncomfortable.
Right.
Irritated or not irritated, calm, happy.
Do you think alcoholics are different that way?
Well, I'm not positive. We might be a little more enhanced or the volume's up on for us.
Yeah.
And if it's not that the volume's up, it's that we cope with it with alcohol, and so we have to cope with it some other way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe other people just cope. I don't know, because I'm an alcoholic, so I don't know.
What other people do,
yeah.
Just know what you do.
Yeah, I just know what I can do.
Well, I think
I
that's
do.
A good, I mean, that's a good analogy that that maybe the volume's up a little higher on some of these character problems, and so it just makes it a little bit more important to deal with things a different way.
Right, exactly.
A new way of life.
Right, and maybe the volume, maybe that's why I drank. I don't know. I drank because I'm an alcoholic, mm-hmm. So maybe these things are, it's all wrapped up in the same thing.
Yeah, but you're not, it doesn't sound like you're highly concerned about the reasons.
Not really.
More concerned with what you're doing
right.
About with yourself today.
Right. Right.
We have a couple more minutes, and I wanted to make sure I got this one in, which is, what would you say to a person who was in more or less in your shoes, what was having trouble staying sober, coming to AA, but drinking either periodically or regularly and then lying about
you know,
it.
No, I share a lot of meetings what my experience was so
I
that people know
yeah.
Where I came from.
Right.
Because I was told you will be uniquely able to help
uh-huh.
Somebody in your shoes.
Right.
And there's so when I share, sometimes people will come up to me and say, I'm doing that
mm-hmm.
Or I've done that. Usually if I'm doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Usually there's no need if they've done it and they've gotten sober, but it's usually I'm doing that.
Right.
And to those people, I normally say first, do not leave.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you do, just keep coming back.
Right.
I have a bracelet that says keep coming back no matter what. That was my mantra because
mm-hmm.
A lot of people say don't drink no matter what.
Keep coming back.
I say keep coming back no matter what. It was a big deal in California with the singing. They'd sing happy birthday, and then they'd say, keep coming back without a drink. I used to cringe every time I heard that.
Yeah, keep coming back, fine, but without the
yeah,
drink.
Yeah, without a drink,
yeah.
And, you know, and sober and all this. And so I stood up on my first birthday anniversary. I stood up in front of, I think it was like 200 people in that room, and I said, don't sing that for me. Sing keep coming back no matter what, because that's what I had to do to get
right.
Sober. I just had somebody 2 weeks ago tell me that
yeah.
He is having these same problems. And
yeah.
I did tell him, just keep coming back. If somebody, I have had numerous people delve a little deeper into how I got sober. And whenever I shared the Anabuse thing, it's fascinating to me how many, they're just like I was the first time it was mentioned to me. Oh, no.
No, not me.
And I don't say this to them, but it's like if you're totally, totally against that, my guess is you're not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I asked for it.
Yeah.
It wasn't even suggested when I got it. It had been suggested a year before.
There's some other stuff out there now, too.
Evidently there is. I don't know too much about it. But,
yeah,
it's stuff that takes away the high or...
Yeah, there's
yeah.
Something called Vivitrol, which is a shot that lasts 30 days.
Seriously, but is it like Anabuse where it makes you sick if you drink?
Well, it reduces craving. It's not
reduces
quite
craving.
The same
it's
as
a
Anabuse.
Different thing because Anabuse
yeah.
Does not reduce craving.
No,
supposedly.
It makes
except
you sick.
Except in me, it's like I couldn't drink all of a sudden. Bingo, didn't want to.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily
right.
The physical properties of the drug itself.
Well,
it
no,
was
because
the,
there is no physical property.
That's the
yeah.
Wall you need.
I was that scared.
Mm-hmm.
I was that scared. It was just like, not for me. So, but I have suggested it to probably in the last 18 years, I've suggested it to probably 25 people.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, not one person has ever done it. So, you know, I don't preach it. Absolutely do not preach it because I'm afraid somebody will take it and die. You know?
Yeah,
so
but it worked for you.
It worked for me.
And it's a good thing.
But I knew it would work for me.
And it's a good thing for people to know.
Right.
That was your point. That was your willingness.
Right.
That was your willingness.
I think it just
point.
Depends on the personality and where you are
right.
In wanting to get sober.
Right.
If you're as desperate as I was, you'll take it.
Right. So what was once your biggest liability has now become an asset.
Yes, I hope so.
I think so. I mean, I think it's an asset. I think it's a good thing for people to hear what you're saying right now. Whoever's mm-hmm. listening and whoever's mm-hmm. going to listen to this show will hear, and this will be around a while, and people can listen to it whenever
yeah.
they choose to. And it's just, it's a good message, and it's a good thing that you bring. So I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you coming out tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate you asking me.
To talk to us.
What's that, studio audience?
We're going crazy. Sit down.
Down in front.
So thanks for coming tonight, Kathy. I appreciate you coming out. And thanks to our listeners and our studio audience.
That's me.
Our regular, Tom F. And we'll email out reminders for next week's show, usually Thursday or Friday. And if you want to get on our email list, go to recoveryinternetradio.com, and you can check out all the archive shows there, and you can also get on the email list. We'd love to hear from you if you're so inclined to go to our website. So as always, live today and love yourself and your neighbor, and together we'll trudge the happy road to destiny. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you at 7 p.m. next Sunday evening. Thanks for coming.